the touch.
Stan Bush here, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Greg.
And this is Dan.
We are Talking Circles, Dr. Podcast Radio Network, the podcast that is a podcasting urban legend, because today, inspired by the fact that we're in October, it is the scary time of year for many, many reasons, but we're going to be talking about urban legends, you know, those epic stories about crazy things that may or not have happened around the world, around the United States, and it should be a lot of fun, a lot of things to talk about. But before we get to that, how's the week been going for you guys?
I had a pretty harrowing experience, I guess, the weekend before we're recording this. My dad and I are hunters, and so we were up in the woods on Sunday, because there's no hunting on Sunday. We were going to build a deer stand for the upcoming deer season.
So they can, hang out and stuff and, like, you know.
We built, a little bar. They could order stuff.
Nice. That's nice.
So we're going to the woods. We go up this steep mountain, and we're walking through the woods, and we find this spot that might be suitable for what we're looking for. So we're kind of, looking it over, and, all of a sudden we hear this, really weird noise. And it's like this kind of scratching and thrashing noise. And
does it sound like Greg when he wakes up?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. It was weird. I've never heard anything like this sound before. And the first thing that came to mind was when a male deer, a buck, has the velvet on his horns this time of year. Well, actually before this, but it becomes very itchy, and they have to scrape it off on the trees and stuff like that. And they call those buck rubs. And but they're still doing those at this time of year. And that's the first thing that came to mind. I'm like, oh, he's there's a buck doing a rub right now. Like, I could hear him against the tree.
Dirtier than it is.
See, I wasn't thinking dirty this time. I was thinking rubbings people do on headstones, where they take the piece of paper and they take a piece of charcoal and they do a rubbing of what's written on the tombstone.
I thought you would have thought rubbing the meat with spices and stuff.
No.
So the deer, I was thinking it was the deer thing, and my dad's no, that's a bear. I'm like, what? Apparently he's heard this noise before. And so we squatted down behind all these logs, and he's like, yeah, it's a bear up in a tree. Those are his nails. He's climbing down the tree. So I'm like, holy crap. And, so we squatted down, we could hear where it was. And, I started really looking in that direction, and I actually caught a glimpse of him. He was coming down the tree, must've heard us coming and just kind of wanted to get out of there. And, wasn't a big bear, but it wasn't a cub either, you know?
Yeah.
And, but he wasn't in a hurry. He kind of got out of the tree and just kind of started walking away from us, you know? And at this point, we're maybe 40 to 50 yards from the actual bear. And, I'd say more closer, a little bit more 40, but, so he starts walking away, and my dad didn't see it, but I was telling him. And then 30 seconds later, we hear the same exact noise again. And it's over in another direction. We're like, holy shit, there's a second one. So this second bear shuffles down the tree and gets down on the ground. And at this point, I'm starting to think in the back of my head,
those bears were having sex in that tree.
Not exactly. But I was thinking, like, this could possibly be, like, two, like, cubs, maybe, because, you know, bear cubs tend to stay with the mother for a couple of years. And I'm like, if, you know, if the mama bear is around here somewhere, if we're between them, we could potentially be in a lot of trouble here. So, and now, black bears, if you don't know, are a totally different thing than, like, grizzly bears and stuff like that. Like, black bears, 99 times out of 100, they'll run away from you more scared than you are. They don't want anything to do with you if they hear you, smell you, things like that. But that being the case, you never can be too careful. It's a wild animal. It's, you know, it is a bear. So I'm like, all right, well, just to be safe, we should just, like, kind of sneak back out the trail a little bit, put some distance between us. And then I proposed we started making a whole bunch of noise and everything. So that's what we did. We started, like, throwing logs and, like, banging stuff, smashing stuff. And thankfully, it just kind of, like, pushed them out of the woods, and we didn't run into them the rest of the day. But it was kind of an interesting experience. I never really had that happen before, so...
I'm guessing you did not build your tree stand there.
I did, actually.
Really?
Actually, yeah, it was up a little bit, like, farther, like, kind of where the bears went off to. We ended up building it there. But, I mean, you can't
Chuck
really
was
be...
like, I'm just going to do my tree stand in the tree that the bears were humping in because I'm a total badass.
I mean, you can't really be scared of them. I mean, they go everywhere in the woods, so it's not like you have a choice. But, you know, the one day I didn't take my pistol with me. I was thinking, like, oh, you know, we're going to be working and doing, you know, carrying trees and everything. I don't want this big heavy, I have like a, it's like a cowboy style. It's a revolver, 357 Magnum. And this is like a very heavy gun. I'm like, I don't want to take it. So, like, as we're kneeling there watching the bears, I'm like, damn it, should have brought the gun. So you bet your ass I'm going to take it next time.
Yeah.
Just for a little peace of mind. But, you know, we weren't, like, scared or anything because, like I said, the black bear, like, nobody ever has a problem with black bear around here for the most part. It's every once in a great while it might be, like, this freak thing, like a mom with a cub or something. But,
yeah. Man. Greg, how things gone with you? Any bear encounters on your end?
No, not really, no. Pretty quiet. I did get Raisin's ashes back, so she's kind of back in the house. And other than that, I think my Camaro has finally sold. Should go through
really?
This weekend. Yep. Didn't get
nice.
As quite as much as I wanted, but I did all right. It's been a long time coming trying to sell it. It's been at the dealership for a while now, so...
So you sold it to the dealership?
Yeah, it was a consignment kind of deal.
Oh, okay, cool.
So they take a little bit off the money, so they take theirs, and I take a huge chunk of it. So
nice.
It worked out. So
now you can buy some more original art from artists.
No, so. Hopefully this will be going towards a place for me, so I'm living at home still.
Nice, very cool. So
could have lived
I was
in the car, Greg.
Could have lived in my car.
Could have lived in the car down by the river.
It's a tight fit in there. I wouldn't want to try and sleep in that car.
Yeah. You'd be the envy of everyone else, though. You know, you'd have the really nice car. But
yeah, I'd park both my cars right next to each other and have the doors open so I could sleep in both of them.
There you go. There you go. Perfect. It's like, wait, this is no.
So this is the kitchen over here in the front seat of the Camaro. The dining room is over in the Subaru.
I guess that's why Chris Farley had a van and not a Camaro.
Yeah, it wouldn't. Camaros are not a good Chris Farley vehicle.
For many reasons.
Yes.
I too was attacked by a wild animal or close to it. It may have been a grasshopper. Or
I was going to see her son, Connor. He's
no,
like, ferocious and like, "Roar, daddy, roar!"
No, it was raining a lot here. It's part of our place's sublevel, so we get a lot of bugs when that happens occasionally. And the one time I was like walking, it was in the morning, I was walking into my bedroom, the lights were off, but I had my phone in my hand, and it legitimately, like, a cricket just jumps right on my phone. And I may have freaked out a little bit, but, you know. I also didn't have my
girly
pistol
screen.
With me, so.
But you're wishing you had the gun so you could shoot the grasshopper. Overkill? No way.
It had it coming. My mice said I yelled bat and ran away, but I don't think that happened. I just thought it was. I think I may have threw my phone.
Trying to imagine this.
But that's about it, you know. It was just, you know, a natural reaction, just trying to be protective by running away very quickly from a little itty bitty.
It would have been great if you threw Carol in the way. Like, no! Dad, what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't think that would go over.
Was it, I think, like, bugs in your house have, like, conspiracy against humans. Because remember the last time we were down there, that freaking moth flew in my mouth?
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus.
That was horrible. Oh, man. Oh,
just gotta,
you know. I was coughing for, like, 10 minutes.
Oh, that was pretty... One thing I did want to talk about real quick. I did have one review of a comic I was able to read from Boom Studios. I wanted to mention it. And I won't take too long, because I actually have a review. If you go to geekcastreader.com, you can read it completely. And it's called Warlords of Appalachia Number 1. Recently came out, like mentioned, by Boom Studios. And the premise of this comic, it takes place, like, of course, in a dystopian future, because that's like half of comics right now. But it's in Kentucky, and I guess after a second civil war for reasons we do not know yet, and that civil war is over, but Kentucky is still kind of not recognized in the United States again or joined the Union, so they've kind of been occupied by some people, and so there's kind of this contentious relationship between the people and the, like, the National Guard that's there. And kind of the focus is on this one guy and his kind of life within this. He has a son who has taken this local drug called Sweet Rock, which apparently, like, deforms you and turns your skin blue, and I guess takes your ability to talk away. So, like, he's kind of, you know, somewhat of an outcast, but he keeps him there. He was a former soldier that quit, and so there's a lot of back and forth between him and the army that's there. He's a very, like, big, brawny guy, and he's actually kind of one of the best things about the comic. And often with, like, first issues, especially ones that take place in a different type of world, you either get one that's all about the world building and one that's about character development. And this kind of had a good balance of both. It was able to kind of bring you into this world and actually give you some sort of character to care about throughout it. And it's very much a setup issue, so you're just kind of getting acclimated to this world. Throughout it, there is this narrator slash radio host that's kind of giving you almost a lowdown on what's going on, and he's very much like a kind of the political analyst we have today, very brash and arrogant, and you kind of find out things about him as the comic goes on. But I thought it was quite good. Artwork, it was maybe not amazing, but I thought it had a lot of character to it. The rural setting was actually quite interesting, because it's something very different, and I think it has a lot of potential. At the end, a lot of basically chaos happens, where a young boy gets killed, some soldiers get captured, and it leads to this, like, basically mini-conflict that is occurring, and at the end, the guy that we're following ends up stealing a tank and going after the remaining soldiers that are there. So, obviously, things are just picking up. But I think it has a lot of good potential. I actually learned about it when we were at Baltimore Comic Con. The creator was there, and he actually has a really extensive background in a variety of things. Like, I think he was in the military. He has a music background. He's written a few other comics as well, and I liked it. And like I said, you can go to geekcastreader.com and read my full review, but I'm really looking forward to it, and I think it has a lot of potential. And speaking of something that has a lot of potential, today as we're recording, the trailer for Logan, Old Man Logan, Wolverine 3, I don't know what I guess they're calling it Logan, dropped. And we got to see a lot. It's very much different than what came before. And Chuck, I know, Greg, you didn't get the opportunity to see it. So, Chuck, what were your overall thoughts on the Logan trailer?
I didn't have too awful many thoughts about it. I mean, I know I liked the comic a great deal, and that was because of Greg's recommendation that I read that, and I ended up really, really enjoying that. When I saw the trailer, for whatever reason, it just it didn't, like, interest me that much. For some reason, to have, like, the same level of excitement or action that I was expecting in the trailer, I don't know. It seemed, like, slow paced and, like, confusing. Like, they didn't really, like, you don't really know what's going on for sure. stuff like that. Obviously, like, if you're familiar with the story, you know a little bit, but I felt for, like, for people that don't really know what it is, they were kind of, like, confused and stuff. So, I don't know. It just didn't really grab my interest. I'm sure when they come out with a second trailer, it'll be better. And, you know, for the time being, I was just kind of like, meh. I don't know.
Interesting. Because I actually liked it a great deal. I mean, I guess it doesn't give you a huge sense of what the plot's going to be. I felt like I had, maybe because knowing the story and some things surrounding it, like, we see a girl who's probably going to be the, you know, X-23, that character. You know, we see that she's in some crazy action moves and stuff like that. She's a little younger than I would expect for that character. So, I think she's like 12 or 13. So that I'm a little concerned about.
That character does kind of start off young, not quite that young, but yeah. Just kind of starting off into the teen years is when that character kind of came into development.
True. See, obviously, that Hugh Jackman is older. We don't know why this time period. Xavier, I guess they kind of replace Xavier with Hawkeye, or replace Hawkeye with Xavier, as this, it seems like it's going to be another road trip, and apparently people are after them, who they are, and the mutants are gone, and who knows what that means. So I felt like for a trailer that was basically just designed to kind of give you an idea of mood-wise of what it might be, and I thought it was a great use of music. I mean, from the beginning to the end, I thought like the build-up was pretty effective. And I also have kind of a theory that you see Charles Xavier in this, and part of me thinks either portion of it or maybe all of it that he's not physically there. Just because you see Logan's older, but he's the same age, basically. It is Patrick Stewart, and I understand he's immortal, so that might be why he doesn't look any older or younger. But I'm just wondering, like, how you would be able to make, you know, Logan older without really aging him, because if you think of Days of Future Past, he was a little bit older, but he was still, you know, he wasn't to the old man Logan sense. So, I mean, the timeline in these X-Men films have been all over the place to begin with, so I'm not going to be a huge stickler for that, but it does make me wonder how that exactly is going to work. Is this, you know, are they going to break out to the X-Men, another dimension type of thing where everything's a little bit different? Who knows? But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's done by the same director who did the last one, and I liked the Wolverine. I think that's what it was called. It wasn't amazing, but I thought it was much better than Origins. So we'll see. I'm guessing with the next trailer, we'll get a little bit more of an idea of what the actual story is going to be.
I'm just a little worried that they're going to kind of take out this huge element of the story, which was like how he sort of refused to pop his claws the entire time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seemed like just from a couple of the shots that he, you know, he was hesitant to, you know, you see the one scene he's like holding a knife or something, which is weird for him. But yeah. You see a few times where he pops the claws. So I feel like they kind of left that really important element out of the story. So that kind of scares me a little bit. I don't know.
I would have. Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that. I don't think that's probably going to be there, because I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, it's going to be tough because we're not going to be able to do what they did with that comic, because it doesn't seem the world is completely like gone. Like, you know, they don't really have any villains to take over like they did with the comics.
Right.
What do they have? Magneto and
Red Skull, I think.
Yeah. The Hulks and stuff like that. Like with the X-Men movies, they really don't have any villains to go off of, unless, you know, Apocalypse has his corner of the world or something like that. So my guess is the only thing it's going to take from the comic is the fact that he's old. And that's probably going to be maybe the extent of it, would be my assumption. Maybe he's like similar to the way the Winter Soldier comic didn't really, it took small tidbits of the actual Winter Soldier storyline, but most of it was pretty different than what actually occurred in the comic, would be my guess. But
one thing I did think was cool was the, like, you see the scars on him and stuff, so obviously like his healing factor is slowed down with his age and stuff, so
yeah,
that was pretty cool.
They do love to take his healing factor away. They did it last movie and it looks like they're doing it again.
So
the other trailer that dropped, and there was very, like, there was even probably less to this than the Logan trailer, and that was the Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Greg, you didn't get a chance to see that either, right?
No. Okay. I'm behind on everything.
Chuck, what did you think of the little glimpses we got with this?
Well, first let me say, Greg, your geek card has been revoked. So, done. and done for a while.
Damn.
This I thought was pretty cool. This was a total surprise. Like I went on Twitter the one day and it happened to be like just after it dropped, I guess. And I was like, oh, what the heck is this? And I checked it out. It was obviously a really short clip, but I thought it was extremely funny. And, you know, they had the exchange between Drax and Star-Lord. I thought that was hilarious. But I was kind of really surprised slash disappointed that they were using the same exact song from the first movie's trailer.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of thought they would, you know, you could go that direction again, but I thought they would just pick a different song, you know, like something that could be the baseline for this movie, sort of that set the theme. And I don't know if it was the best choice to use the same exact song. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're banking on the fact that that's what people remember about the first one and that's familiar, so it'll kind of grab them more. I don't know. I could see that angle too, but I was hoping for like a different song to kind of, you know, be playing. I thought that would be cool. But
yeah, I think that's probably kind of it. Like, it's probably maybe in an upcoming will get a little bit different, because you think about like the end of it, like he got the new mix with new music. So I hope they don't just kind of reuse what they did previously. So I agree. That's like, okay, use it for this trailer, but don't use it now for everyone going forward. Kind of, you know, diversify a little bit. Like there is not a lot. Like the back and forth between Drax and Star-Lord was really great, and Batista's really, really kind of getting that role down pretty well. And we get a little bit of a sneak peek to Baby Groot and Rocket, so that's going to change that dynamic a little bit, I guess, in the movie. But and some flashbacks to some of the characters that are coming back, like Nebula and things like that. So
yeah.
I was hoping for maybe something from Ego, but I'm sure it's way too early to do that. I'm sure they haven't finished what that looks like. But like you said, it's a nice little surprise. I'm guessing like we'll get a bigger trailer coming soon when we have things like the maybe there'll be one with Doctor Strange being released. I don't know if this is the one that's going to be tagged along with Doctor Strange, but I don't know. There's a lot of comic book movies coming out next year.
Yeah,
I think more than this year. So
I'm really interested to see what the after credit scene is for Doctor Strange. Like, I have no idea where they're going to go with that. So
what is the next Marvel movie? Is it Guardians or is it? It's Spider-Man?
I thought it was the Spider-Man one, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Somewhere someone's screaming at their listening device.
There's like 1,000 freaking... No, well, Thor, then there's Thor Ragnarok, and is that... I don't even know. Thor Ragnarok is next November.
Yeah, that's
so next. Doctor Strange, and then we have Spider-Man in July, and then Thor in November. So so there's 2 Marvel movies coming out next year, and then 2 in April. Or, sorry, 2 in 2018 with Black Panther and Ant-Man and Wasp. So.
Avengers 3 is supposed to be that year, too, right?
Oh, yeah. As, 2018. In that as well. So, there you go. Wait, there's going to be a lot of Marvel movies. And then you have, like, Justice League and Wonder Woman next year, too. And we're just getting started. And then Logan. So, yeah. There's no break for us whatsoever.
We're going to have to get conditioned.
Yeah. Awesome. Alrighty. Well, we promise everything we talked about so far has been true, but we cannot say that for what's coming next as we get into some of the most infamous urban legends of our time. So we'll get to that right after these messages.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top 3 list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, and welcome back. Yes, today we're going to go in and discuss some of the craziest urban legends, looking at around our area, around the United States, to see, you know, what people believe, what is real, what is fake. There's, you know, sometimes urban legends have been proven true, some have been proven false. Actually, one I figured I would start with real quick was one that was kind of, I guess not debunked, but was revealed recently. I don't know. Have you ever guys heard of the tradition when it comes to Edgar Allan Poe's grave in Baltimore?
Oh, I think I heard of it, but I don't remember exactly what it is.
The only thing I may have heard is something that you may have told us, I think, about putting the drink out or something.
Yeah, so basically every, it was for, you know, since the 60s or even before and after, for a very long time, there was every year some hooded figure, people would not know who this person was, would leave three flowers, three roses, and a little drink of scotch at Edgar Allan Poe's grave for extended periods, for basically, I think it went on for decades, and people didn't know why. It became like an annual thing where people would wait up and like wait for this person to come, and because where Edgar Allan Poe's grave is, it's all kind of, it's guarded, and you can't just get in, you can't just like walk in. So like, you know, how the person got in there was kind of a mystery, like where, what was this all happening? And then not too long ago, it just stopped happening. Like no one, it's just like people are waited, and it never occurred, and it hasn't happened, I think, the last few years. And it was kind of discovered that the person who was doing it was one, a person who worked for the Edgar Allan Poe, like, Historical Society, and he started doing it as basically a publicity stunt for throughout this time to try to garner up some attention for Edgar Allan Poe, and it worked, and it kind of grew and grew and grew. Why it stopped, I wasn't able to see why. I don't know if the man passed away, because he was doing it for a very long time, and he dedicated his life to Edgar Allan Poe and trying to spread the word of him. But you know, it was just this huge legend in Baltimore. It became like almost like a tradition where people would wait up and like have a little like party waiting for this person, and then it was just some dude trying to sell out Edgar Allan Poe merchandise to people. So the truth isn't always all that exciting, I guess.
As well as a good racket, you know, a good try to drum up the awareness for Edgar Allan Poe and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was effective. There's a lot of, like, that's just one of many legends regarding Edgar Allan Poe. I used to go to this. It was a bar slash a really great restaurant called the La Horseshoe Road Inn on, and it was legendary, like, the last bar that he would drink, and they would always leave a drink out for him every night as well, and it was that he would haunt the bar and like things would fall off, and it was like this long list of things. Pretty much, I feel like any historical city in the East Coast has tremendous amount of ghost stories, which we'll probably get to. But yeah, I figured we'd start with one that shows that, you know, we sometimes it's good not to know, because then that ruins all the fun. But I know, Chuck, you looked up a bunch, so anyone that you wanted to bring up to talk about?
I do have a bunch. I looked up some from around the country. I'm sure anybody that did a Google search could find a lot, and I'd be interested to know if anybody listening had like some from their area and stuff like that that were famous. But what I was going to do is maybe just share a couple general ones from other parts of the country, and then I think I'll probably finish up with a couple of them that I have that are like real local to Greg and myself, like where we're from. So I thought that would be interesting, but I'll just share a couple from other places in the country, so to speak. I guess the first one I'll talk about is called the Michigan Triangle.
Nice. And, again, yeah. Sounds like some dirtier than it probably should be, but yeah.
It's, I'm sure you've all heard of the Bermuda Triangle. This is kind of the same concept, basically. You know, this has to do with Lake Michigan, and it has to do with an area of the lake enclosed by three points, and apparently there has been a lot of aircraft and boats gone missing without any explanation in this area. They may have sunk or crashed or things like that. Nobody can explain why it really keeps happening in this area. A lot of people say it's because of like storms that form quickly across the lake, and like you know, things come up quickly and stuff like that. But what's weird is like archaeologists have like been to the lake, and they've sent like dive teams and stuff like that. They've discovered these prehistoric rocks that look like they're like the remains of this weird ancient civilization and stuff like that under the water. And there's all this other crazy stuff surrounding it. People have seen like all kinds of weird lights over the lake, red lights. And, you know, of course, all the UFO people were, you know, saying that the UFOs are involved and everything now. So there's just a huge mystery surrounding this place with tons of stuff going wrong. And I think, you know, with any urban legend, with every report that happens, it just kind of keeps growing and morphing into more stuff. So it's kind of the classic urban legend, but it does sound very interesting that, you know, they can't explain why a lot of these accidents have taken place in that area.
Yeah. So when they found the Asian rocks, were they just like, were they like a Native American descent, or did they not even know?
They're not really sure. It's just, it looks like, it's like an ancient people. It looks like some sort of temple. They don't really have a picture. They just have a picture of a rock. I can't really see anything, but they claim it looks to be the remains of some sort of temple or something. I have no idea why it's underwater in Lake Michigan, but you know, again, there's lots of explanations for things. Maybe, you know, people, you know, maybe a boat sank there with that was carrying stuff, or who knows. But definitely an interesting story.
Yeah, that's great. I never heard of the Michigan Triangle. That's interesting. Yeah. Michigan Panhandle, yeah, but no.
Maybe Detroit is one of the points. Maybe that's why it's so.
That could explain a lot, yeah. I'm sure if you go to Detroit, you can see a lot of ancient ruins, but unfortunately, right. It's not. It's a different type of reason.
A lot of collapsed temples.
Yeah, yeah. What would you call an historical urban legend? Maybe not an urban legend? I don't know, but you guys know the saying "Saved by the Bell," right? Obviously, we know the TV show, but do we know where it came from, or where the legend is that it came from? Well, the legend, I guess, goes that during the Black Plague, they were running out of places to bury people, and they wanted to basically be able to do it in a way that was so they weren't burning the bodies, or, you know, and so they were trying to find what they could do. So they decided, well, we're going to have to reuse grave sites and bury people within the same grave. It's only, you know, only option. There's nowhere else.
Oh, I know this one.
Yeah. And so they began to dig up different graves, and, you know, and when they were doing that, and they took out, and they would basically open up some of the graves, the caskets, what they saw inside, a good number of them were scratch marks on a lot of them, and they realized a lot of these people were buried alive. They thought they were dead, and maybe they were comatose, you know. It was the point where they didn't really have the technology, or so once they saw that, oh wow, this wasn't actually these people weren't actually dead, they were like, well, what do we do? So in order to kind of get around that, they decided to then, okay, when they bury people, now they would bury them in the casket, put a ribbon on their fingers, tie that ribbon to basically as they, you know, as they're buried, but tie that ribbon to a bell that would be next to their grave. And then if, you know, someone started hearing the bell ringing, they would then come dig up the grave and let the person out. So that's where the Saved by the Bell came, because now that they can find out that they're actually not dead. They were just buried alive, which is, like, for many people, probably one of the scariest things I could think of is being buried alive. So, again, don't know if it's actually true, but it sounds good.
Yeah, I've heard of people actually doing that. I have also heard of people actually putting in telephones later on when the technology became available. And so people were getting, like, weird calls from the grave.
What's up, dude? Just down here, buried alive. Get me out, man.
Someone you know checks in on Facebook, on Twitter. Like, it's like, wait. Oh, he brought it. He buried with his phone. So
not quite dead yet.
It's like, I have the best selfie right now, but I don't have any service.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So if I'm thinking Saved by the Bell, so does that mean we could bury Zach Morris and Screech? Or no?
At least Screech. I think Zach Morris. I think the guy who plays Zach Morris is having a legit career after. But yeah, Screech can go away. Yeah. I think he's in jail right now. So
he kind of did go away. I was gonna say, away for a long time.
True. Yeah, he'll be gone. What did he stab somebody? I forget, but I don't know.
Something weird. Yeah.
Very cool. Did you want to do another one?
Sure. I have a few of them here, but this one, the one I'm going to go next, I'm going to go down to Texas, and everything's bigger in Texas. So this is the story of a really big face on the outside of a building, and it's called the Galveston Ghost Face. It's in Galveston, Texas, and it's on the campus of a college, a school, and I guess they have a picture of it here. It's kind of blurry, but it does indeed look like to be some sort of a loose like silhouette of a face right on the side of the concrete of the building, and it's very large. I would say it's probably about 8 to 10 feet in height. So I guess what happened was there was a man who owned the building way back when, and for whatever reason when he passed on, he did not want it donated to the medical school there. For whatever reason, I don't know if he had a grudge with somebody or disagreement or something, but apparently like he vowed that if they, you know, gave the building to the medical school, that he would like find a way to haunt it or something like that. So sure enough, after he had passed on and everything, the building was given to the medical school, and that's when this face sort of showed up on the outside of this concrete. And they've done everything from like sandblasting the concrete to scrubbing it and washing it and all these other things, and for whatever reason the face just kind of reappears like the next day. And the interesting thing about this to me is you know, they found some posts from social media, looks like it might be Facebook or something, from like students that have actually gone here, and I can read a couple of these real quick. This guy says, "The first time I saw this face was in the early 80s, about 11 o'clock at night. Went back in the daytime 2 days later. Yes, they have sandblasted the wall and replaced the whole wall, and the face is never ending. The property was owned by a man, blah, blah, blah." That, I already told that. He would come back to haunt them. True story. Next guy says, "This is not a pareidolia," or whatever you call it, "when your mind plays tricks on you. This thing even glows at night." Another person substantiating that they've tried to sandblast it and all these other things, tried to paint over it, and it actually moved down the building, somehow migrated physically on the outside of the building. It's now just above the door. They're leaving it alone now, they've decided, or something like that. And there's other students that keep saying, "I know for a fact this isn't fake. I've, you know, been on the campus, I've seen this thing firsthand, blah, blah, blah." So pretty crazy story there for sure. Whether it's anything to do with that or it's some other sort of phenomenon, I guess we can't really tell, but it is a little creepy.
Or, you know, some college students taking some substances and seeing things that might happen on occasion.
College students would never engage in that sort of behavior, right? I mean,
no, that's yeah, that's unlikely. But that's, yeah, that is kind of intriguing for sure. Speaking of faces, that actually kind of goes with, well, this one's kind of cheating because it's in Pennsylvania, so I don't know if I'm cheating by going with one that was in your area, but it's actually one that was proven true. So, but it's, I guess, true, but still kind of creepy. And there's an image that it's very like haunting image. We talked about like North Nosferatu last time, and how he's still kind of creepy, or actually 2 weeks ago. But this guy, it's unfair but anyway, so there was this legend in Cobble, Pennsylvania. It actually was in the early 1900s that there was this man with no face that would walk the streets at night, and like there was tons and tons of sightings saying they would see this figure of a man walking, and they would see him, but his face, just like, it was nothing there. It was just like, you know, no distinct features or whatsoever. And, you know, it started spreading more and more, and they would, you know, people kept saying they were seeing this man. And what turns out is the fact that they actually were seeing this guy. And, so again, this is one that's, maybe not as exciting because it's true, or maybe it's more exciting, but I guess he was a man who was defigured because of a horrible accident that he hit an electric pole, which disfigured his face, and he said it would cause babies to cry and people would, you know, be in shock and in awe. So he would not go out during the daytime. He would only walk during night and to go visit family and things like that. So it causes urban legend and ended up kind of spreading further and further as people kind of, you know, it became almost like a, I wouldn't say modern day Elephant Man, but a Elephant Man type like figure that spread throughout couple Pennsylvania, which I don't even know where that is, but it's kind of creepy. I'll put a link, but the photo is just, he almost looks like a clown without any eyes, if that makes any sense. But
nice. So. I have actually heard that story before. I have not seen the picture. I'm not sure that I want to.
I mean, I assume it's. That's, I mean, I don't know if exact is the guy, but it seems like it could be. So maybe that'll be the new urban legend.
Yeah.
I don't know. But going out of this one's just kind of funny. As we all know, you know, while we have many dedicated people on History Channel that are looking for Sasquatch, do you know that Florida has its own Sasquatch or Sasquatch-like creature?
Everybody.
Oh, I do.
Sasquatch type creature, no matter where you're at, there's like some kind of Sasquatch creature around.
Is this the skunk ape?
That is a skunk ape. Yeah.
Yes, love the skunk ape.
Yeah. Did you have a story about him as well?
No, I've heard of him before.
Yeah, so apparently he is the, you know, he travels around that of Florida, and he is, you know, I guess somehow related to that of Sasquatch. I don't know if it's through marriage or what have you, but he's kind of that type of creature. But he apparently just smells really bad and walks like an urge and walks like an ape, and it's a man-like creature. And, of course, with Florida, they would have their Sasquatch would also smell really bad. But, you know, maybe too much time in the Everglades, I don't know. But, yeah, the skunk ape, which I never even heard of. I'm surprised that you, I don't know. I didn't know that you did, but I'm like, that's skunk ape. That sounds very weird. But
I'm really into these stories. I've read quite a few of them over the years. But, yeah, and my guess is that he originated from another state, and when he retired, he moved down there.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. They have a good lottery system down there and everything.
Maybe he migrates, like the geese, right? The Canadian geese that they migrate. Maybe it's, you know, it's the, not Winnebago, that's a car. What is the one in, Wendigo, you know, Wendigo in Canada. And then, you know, he travels down to when it gets cold out, goes to Florida and becomes a skunk ape.
Well, with the Wendigo, it's a whole thing of people eating human flesh, and then they're cursed after they eat the human flesh, and they turn into the Wendigo.
True.
Wendigo. And then they fight the Hulk.
That's also very true.
Well, maybe that explains the skunk appearance, because like it's white, and then, you know, by the time it gets down through the Everglades with all the mud, it's kind of like black with like a white stripe. Maybe, I don't know.
It's what, like, what was that Looney Tune that would turn into it? Like everyone thought he was a cat, but he was really Pepe Le Pew. It's kind of like,
oh yeah, Pepe. I used to love that. Yeah.
There you go.
He was in love with the cat that looked like him. Yeah.
Exactly. He was a romantic, you know.
He was hopeless romantic.
You got any more, Chuck?
I do. I have a couple more. This is fun. But I like these monster stories because they're intriguing for some reason. And this one's actually pretty kind of closely related to your Florida dude, your skunk ape. And this is from South Carolina, and it's called the Lizard Man.
Nice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reports, Lizard Men.
Yes.
I will chime in on this one, Chuck.
All right, cool. And I just wanted to make the connection to like last week, how I mentioned I liked the creature from the Black Lagoon, Gill Man, as he's called. And this kind of reminds me of him a lot. And there's this really, really corny ass picture that somebody claims they've taken of him. And it's clearly someone in a cheap ass costume. But it is hilarious, this picture. We got to put a link to that up. But anyway, this kind of, I don't know where exactly it started, but there's been a lot of reports, and this people have described like something while they're driving, kind of running across the field. It either runs into the car or on top of the car and like grabs pieces of the car, scratches, claws at it, things like that. And there've been a lot of like police reports where they've found like abandoned cars like in the country and stuff, and they found like these really bizarre bite marks and scratch marks and stuff like on the metal, like on the car and everything like that. And tons of sightings by civilians. And then in 2015, apparently this picture that I was referring to was taken, and it just looks so stupid. It's like obviously someone in a costume, but you know, it is an urban legend, and it obviously has its roots somewhere, and it has some modicum of truth probably, because everyone keeps seeing it and everything, and just keeps kind of growing this crazy thing.
So. And there's also people that claim that there are lizard people that are actually like the shadow government of the world, and that they actually live underground and have lived on the earth longer than human beings, and then human beings kind of came along and took over, and that we kind of like knocked them down underground, but they still kind of control the surface government and everything, and that there's like these tunnels underneath, and there's we're still in contact with them and everything. I forget where it was. It might have been on the Mysterious Universe podcast that I heard about there being some kind of security guard came out about the lizard people. He worked security down there, and he had like this whole thing about how the rules ran down there. It was very interesting. I forget exactly where I found it from, but there's also claims that Queen Elizabeth is a lizard person, and there's like and it also builds into the Bilderberger Foundation.
Oh yeah.
And what's the
Bilderberg? Like, is it Bilderberg also part of this?
No, Bilderberg. Bilderberg.
Bilderberg workshop.
Secret underground.
Yeah, it's Build-A-Bear, but with lizards. Workshop. Yeah.
But are you thinking of the Rothschilds?
Might be the Rothschild. It also might be there's also another get together of like political leaders and stuff. Well, that's very
ties into that whole New World Order thing.
Yes, it does. Yeah. So there's a bunch of interesting stuff out there about lizard people beyond just like sightings of like creatures that are kind of brainless, but ones that are trying to take over the world, kind of, essentially.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because I was just watching this video the other day about the Rothschild banking family, and I don't know if it's true or not. But
yeah, but it's very interesting concepts.
Apparently they control, they own the central bank for every country in the entire world except for three countries or something.
Yeah.
And they said they're like in on this thing to like form this one world government, the New World Order, and all this crap. And I mean, it's a little crazy, but it's kind of interesting, like, you know, what they talk about.
Yeah. And I think that somehow the Bushes are kind of related into that as well. I watched some kind of video too, and that they said like the father had like some kind of in, and like through the oil business and whatever. And that's also an interesting kind of little side shoot urban legend. Yeah. Kind of thing.
I'm not sure if the whole Men in Black thing fits in with that, or if that's separate.
From what I heard, that's kind of a separate thing. A lot of people think those are kind of alien creatures, because I've heard a lot of funny stories with them with food. Like Jell-O very much confuses them. They're like, at first they were like, what are we supposed to do with this? And they're like,
you feed aliens with Jell-O.
You eat it, and they'd like put it in their mouth, and like it would just be very awkward.
Bill Cosby is our champion against the aliens.
Pretty much.
Well, it's like, from what I've read, there were a couple connections. Like, some people think the Men in Black are like part of that shadow government thing. And like, whenever something shady happens, like, you know, people see like the Men in Black kind of show up, and everything gets swept under the rug. And you know, nobody really knows what's happened. Nobody gets any answers or anything. So I think there's kind of like two sides to that story for some reason.
But usually is.
Yeah. But yeah, lizard men.
Now, are they related to the crab people too, or are they like a faction that's against?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Lobster Johnson is their king.
Johnson is a comic book character from the Hellboy universe.
Hey, we're just mashing everything together right now.
in the crab people are from South Park, and
yes, they are.
They have a great theme song, Crab People.
No, I'd rather the Underwear Gnomes theme song.
True. All right. Well, let me get back to one that's actually Baltimore has a lot of different ones. And actually, it was interesting. I was looking at ones in my area, and I was looking at worldwide ones. And this was one that popped up in both. This is a pretty well-known urban legends from across the world, I guess, which I didn't realize. And actually, it takes place not too far from me. And it's called Black Aggie. The premise of it basically is that in this graveyard, which is not that too far from me, and if it's this gigantic, huge graveyard, it could probably take up a couple city blocks. It's huge. And within this graveyard was this really haunting looking statue called Black Aggie, and it. This again, there's a photo of it. This is an actual statue that did exist. There's no question about it. It looked like a kind of a cross between like if you took kind of like a fallen angel and put the Grim Reaper's cape over her in a way. We're sitting on a rock. It was just this haunting looking, really ominous statue, and the people kind of were freaked out by it for a lot of reasons. And there's a lot of stories that go along with it. There are basically these thoughts that would drive people insane. At one point, there was a time where an individual brought his wife there and basically sawed her arms off. And there was many occasions where people would be sick around it and would just stare at it for ages. And grass would never grow in the area around it. It said it would kill pretty much anything in its vicinity. He kind of got the nickname of Dark Angel, and basically the police actually kind of got annoyed with it because of all the different activity that would occur around it. Bad things would happen. So eventually, actually, they moved it. And now it has been locked away in the Smithsonian, that they've taken it on out of the actual graveyard because of all the trouble it was causing. And moved it to the Smithsonian, into the catacombs of the Smithsonian, where it's just collecting dust at the moment. But you know, it was having such a huge impact, and it's not like it's, you know, I think it's not, I don't know, it's not something where I would look at this statue and think, oh, obviously there's an urban legend about it, but something about it, I don't know what its color or something, it just drove people crazy.
Do not know anything about that one.
No, either did I, and it's legitimately from down the street. So
here's a short, quick one for you. Were they? Did you hear about the one where they were like doing underwater scans to try and find this sunken ship from like way back when to like find the treasure and everything from it? But they ended up finding this like weird shadow that kind of looks like the Millennium Falcon.
No, I did not find that.
That one's just kind of one I know offhand. That's been came out recently, within like the past 5 years or so.
So is that where George Lucas got it from?
No, he came up with the Millennium Falcon before, way before that was found. By the way, if anybody wants to see a lot of the good weird urban legend stuff, I would definitely check out a show that was on like a few years back. It was presented by John Noble, who was on the TV show Fringe as well. The show is called Dark Matters. They had a whole bunch of neat little things like this. One of them, I believe, was like two French ladies go to like this museum, and they kind of get like sucked back, like go into the bathroom, and they come back out, and they're like in a different time, kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then also in that respect, a good comic book graphic novel that kind of is the same kind of thing as that urban legend, MPH by Mark Miller, kind of did something like that. So I'd check that out as well. That's definitely fiction because it's written by Mark Miller. But definitely check out the Dark Matter shows if you want to see some of the stuff. They present it really cool.
Nice. Chuck, do you have any? I have a few more too. I don't know if you wanted to. If you have any other ones you wanted to share.
I have one more from elsewhere, and then I have a couple of quick ones I'll share later from my hometown. But someplace that I've been before, someplace that I've visited, and I think I've mentioned on the show before, but I've been to Salem, Massachusetts before in October, which is one of the coolest experiences. Like, if you like Halloween or this time of year and you're into this kind of stuff, urban legends and ghost stories and stuff, it is a really cool place to be. Definitely take the walking tours that they offer there. There's legitimately, like, when you're out in the daytime or towards the evening, there are guys standing on the sidewalks that are trying to organize ghost tours. And, you know, they're passing out, like, these cards and stuff. And you just come back and meet them at a certain time. And it's very informal. And you just kind of meet up and you go on this walking tour. And they tell you the real, like, ghost stories of Salem and everything like that. And they actually walk you down the streets. And it's extremely cool because they have it at night, obviously, and it's dark and just kind of adds to the elements. And, you know, with all the stuff surrounding Salem with the witch trials and all the ghost stories over the years, you know, it gets in your head a little bit, you know, when you're there, when you're actually at the place, because there's just so much history there and so much pain and everything that of the things that have happened there. So stuff just kind of gets in your head. And I will say we didn't see any, like, ghosts or anything weird up there. One thing that's cool about the town that I didn't know was they have the second oldest cemetery in the entire United States. Obviously they were, you know, one of the early colonies there. They weren't the first cemetery, but that was the second, you know, organized cemetery that was actually built and sustained and everything. And they have this kind of, like, you know, cast iron, like, gate around the whole thing. And they tell people, like, you know, you're not allowed to go in there after dark, but, you know, when you're out walking the streets, the gates of it are conveniently left, like, wide open and stuff. So people go in there and everything, and you see people in there with their digital cameras trying to get pictures with orbs on them and things like that. And so, like, we went in there. We actually went in the cemetery, I think it was, like, at midnight. There were actually a lot of other people out too and everything, so it really wasn't that scary or anything, but we took a bunch of pictures and didn't see anything. But it was a really cool experience. And but one of the point I'm building to is one of the ghost tours we went on. The tour guide was very good. He was very animated, very good storyteller, as they tend to be. But he told the story of a certain individual named Giles Corey. And if you ever have a chance to, like, do this and hear this story, like, really pay attention. This is, like, such an interesting story. But this kind of got me, like, this kind of got in my head, like, while we were there. He talks about this guy that lived in the late 1600s. His name was Giles Corey. And he owned this farm with indentured servants and everything like that. And he was, like, very cruel to them and stuff. And I guess he had, you know, beaten some of them. I think the one guy, like, actually, like, beat to death or something like that. So there's a lot more to the story. I'm just kind of, like, paraphrasing and shortening it up. But basically he kind of ends up going on trial for killing this man that worked for him. And at this point in his life, he's very old. When he actually gets convicted of this, I think he's about 80 years old, somewhere in there. And one of the forms of execution at that time was called execution by pressing. So what they would do is just put this big, wide, heavy wooden board on top of you. You're laying down, and they just keep stacking these heavy rocks on you until you died. And it's like, oh, that's nice. That's awesome. But so, you know, he gets convicted of his crime and everything.
They were really good at finding ways to kill people back then. It's like
they were very creative with it for some reason. You know, they could have just like shot him, but no. and part of the thing too was like, you know, people, there was this whole side story where people thought he was like a wizard, which is like a male witch or whatever. And, you know,
you're a wizard, Harry.
You know, there's the whole hysteria with the witches there. It's really like sad what actually happened. Like people just freaking lost their minds and like freaked out about stuff. But, so he gets, he's being pressed to death. And this was a process that took like a few days. Like this wasn't something that was over in like a couple hours or something. So they would keep adding this heavy weight. And the whole thing with this was like, he refused to plead guilty to his crime. And, you know, they would come back and ask him, and they would wait several hours, and they would come back. And he refused to make a plea, whether it was innocent or guilty, he refused to say. And all he would say when they would come is more weight, more weight. So he was kind of like egging them on to like put more weight on him. And so they kept adding more weight. And this went on for a couple of days. And, you know, he just kept saying more weight when they kept coming back and asking him to confess and stuff like that. So what happened was he reached the point of his death, and you know, he cries out, you know, more weight again. And right before he died, I guess he cursed the sheriff. It was Sheriff Corwin at the time of the town of Salem. And he said something about like, you know, not only curses Sheriff Corwin, but every one of his sheriff successors, like through the years or something like that, he would like curse him. So, you know, so he dies and everything. And, years go by, and like for the longest time, as this guy told us in the ghost story, every subsequent town sheriff that they have, something really mysterious happened to him, and you know, were killed in mysterious ways and things like that. He said it was the strangest thing. You know, one of them would die a certain way, like a really strange accident. A new sheriff would be sworn in, you know, maybe would go a few years or something, but then something really strange would happen to him and he would die in some weird way. And they said, you know, everyone in the town believed that it was this curse from Giles Corey that he uttered before he died. And obviously the trend broke after a while and, you know, nothing happened, but for quite a few times it did happen, and it really got people kind of freaked out and everything. So that was one of the coolest ghost stories that I heard up in Salem.
Man, I mean, they have such a, like, a huge history of ghost stories. It's like, I feel like them and, like, Gettysburg are battling out for the most haunted places.
Yeah. Both places that I've been, and I still have never seen anything weird, so. But heard a lot of cool stuff.
Weird things, but not necessarily weird in a ghost kind of way.
Right.
Nice. All right. Well, I have one. Maybe, Greg, you might like this one. It's called Humans Can Lick, Too.
Okay.
Have you heard the story?
So you'll probably get partway through, and I've probably heard of it. I listen to a lot of weird shit.
So the story goes that there was actually no location tied to this one, but it's kind of it's one of those. It's like the waking up with in a tub of ice with your kidneys gone type of thing.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah. So the story goes that there is this girl who basically, you know, her parents end up buying her a dog. Apparently something bad happened. They kind of wanted to cheer up for some reason. And one day, though, that they, one weekend, they actually end up going away. And she's home alone, and she's kind of getting ready to go into sleep. And she's like, you know, going, she starts hearing like a dripping sound. And so she goes down to the sink.
So far, I have not heard of this, by the way.
So she wakes up and she hears like a dripping sound. She's kind of half awake. She puts her like hand, you know, it like was laying on the ground, the dog starting to lick her hand. She's like, okay, like what's going on? So she goes down, tap was running. She turns it off, comes back home, goes back, lays down, Again, here's another dripping sound. Again, waking up by the dog licking her hand. Goes back down. Turns it off, and then she's like up now. So she's like, all right, well, I might get something to eat. And she's looking through her cupboard. She opens the cupboard, and she sees the head of her dog. And with a poster, with a sign that says, humans can lick too. And she ends up fleeing, leaving as quickly as possible, realizing that what she thought was a dog licking her from under the bed was obviously some individual who killed her dog and got off by licking her in the hand.
Oh, I've never heard of that one. That was very interesting.
Interesting is a word to use, or creepy, I guess. very elaborate plan, I guess, for that guy. It's like, let's be, you know, kill a dog and...
Payoff either. Like, what's the payoff?
The fact that he was licking her hand the entire time and she thought it was the dog. But, yeah. Which means, like, dogs have a very specific type of lick, so... Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Which makes me think maybe it's not true, but, you know, I trust random website that I Googled, so... anyways, Jeff, I'm sure you have a little bit more interesting than that.
No, I've actually read that one before too. But I remember thinking that's super creepy. But the whatever website I read it on that didn't explain it as well as that, so I never really understood the point of it. But that version sounded a lot better than what I read. So, all right. So this one I'm gonna kind of bring it back to my hometown. I have a couple of them here, but. I guess I'll start with this is a story that actually my uncle told me, and I believe it happened in the late 1970s, if I'm not mistaken. And it was at a butcher shop, a meat locker type of place, just up the road from me, and actually not far from where you grew up, Dan. It was in...
In your house. Ooh.
It was known as Darling's Meat Locker.
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah. Well, that was owned by that family for a long time, and it's changed hands since. But my uncle knew of this story where, you know, the original owners, the husband and wife, they had a son. I forget his name. I guess it's not really important, but what is important is he was, he had some problems. He had some anger issues. He was a little slow, things like that. And he had this medicine that he used to take, and, he was a huge, huge, like hulking man. Like he was giant, super strong and stuff like that. Always used to like doing hard manual labor and everything, big, strong guy. So the way the story goes was one night he went to pick up a cow that with the truck that someone was selling to them to have butchered and things like that. So he goes to the farm to get the cow, loads it on the truck, and he's driving home. And apparently on the ride home, the truck runs out of gas. And he's about, I think about a mile and a half from where he needs to be from their butcher shop. So not that far, but still you would think kind of far. So what he ends up doing is with the cow in the back of this truck, he pushes the truck the rest of the way by himself, a mile and a half.
Jeez.
This gives you an idea of how strong this guy was and how much like endurance and everything he had. So he gets back, and apparently he, you know, had not taken his medication that night or something like that. But he just starts like freaking out on his father for not putting gas back in the truck before he let him use it and stuff. And he just completely like kind of loses his mind, goes into this fit of rage and stuff like that. And at one point they're arguing back and forth, and he grabs a meat cleaver and starts kind of like, I guess, chasing him or swinging it at him or threatening him, something like that. And nothing ended up happening to the parents, but they were scared for their lives. Obviously, they knew he was prone to these episodes, and if he hadn't taken his medicine or something like that, they weren't quite sure what he was capable of. So they call the state police to come to the scene, told them about the situation. So like all these cop cars came, and they sort of like surround the building and everything. And he's just like losing his mind at this point, complete fit of rage, berserker rage, if you will. And he comes out of the place, still holding the meat cleaver. And, you know, the cops do their thing, telling him to drop the weapon. You know, he needs to calm down, kind of get down on the ground, things like that. Completely unresponsive, does not listen to the cops. And at one point starts kind of moving towards the cops, kind of walking towards them. And they keep telling him to drop the weapon, put the weapon down. He's not listening. So he just keeps, he kind of like starts moving at them quickly. So the cops kind of left with no choice. They open fire on him. And there were several cops there at the time. So you could imagine the hailstorm of bullets flying through the air as all these cops sort of open fire on this maniac with a meat cleaver running at them. And according to my uncle, it was somewhere in the range of, he was shot about 25 to 30 times and was still coming at them before he actually fell and died just before he reached them. But, you know, it took nearly 30 rounds to actually bring this guy down. That's how like pumped up on adrenaline and how strong he was and everything. Just crazy story. And like my uncle and I talk about, like, you know, something like this almost seems scarier than any like sci-fi movie you watch, because this number one is real, and or, you know, most of the aspects of it are real. Maybe over the years certain things have got embellished, but you know, this is stuff that like can happen, you know, like this is something realistic. So it just kind of sends this weird shiver up your spine that, you know, it took so much force to bring one man down that was just determined to kind of take his anger out on somebody. So
nice. I mean, it's like, and comes out to find out that's where the Terminator got its start, I guess. Right.
That's kind of what I imagine it like. You're like, you're just shooting this guy and he just keeps coming like it's not even facing him. Like, these poor police officers were probably like crapping their pants, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, what is it going to take to bring this guy down, you know? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts. Man, the power of PCP, I guess. I don't know. Alrighty. Well, let's see. Do I have any more that I can bring up?
Assuming everybody's heard of Roanoke, Virginia. Virginia. Got a little bit of lisp. The Croatoan. Lost colony.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about it, maybe there's, you know, our public education system is not.
Well, back in the day when America was first getting discovered and everything, there was a team that came out and kind of colonized in Roanoke, Virginia. They set up a nice little government. A lot of famous people came from that time. I don't remember offhand. But after a while, things were starting not look the greatest, and so a couple of them went back to England to kind of get them a little bit more vocal support over in England to kind of bring them more goods and everything to help them get set up. But they kind of get stuck there with various wars and stuff that they were needed for, so they couldn't get an expedition out to them again very quickly. So by the time they did get back, the colony was deserted, and I believe like they took down a lot of it too, except for the walls and stuff. And it was very walled in, defended, I believe. But all they found, the remnants of them, was carved into a tree the word Croatoan. Nobody really still knows to this day what that actually means. They think it might have something to do with Indian tribes. There's a lot of theories on what it actually means, but nobody actually knows what happens to this colony. I believe one of the famous people is Virginia Dare. I believe she was the first person born in America that wasn't a Native American. So,
and, well, we did get some answers, because if you saw Predator 2, they they did hint out what actually happened. So, I mean, we did find out a little bit of what occurred.
I did not see Predator 2.
Any relation to...
Sounds like I have to now.
What is it, Croatoa?
Croatoan.
Croatoan, okay. I was going to say, is that related to Krakatoa? Or?
I don't think so, Tim.
I don't think so, Tim. Interesting.
All right. Chuck, you have any more?
I do have one more. And this wasn't so much an urban legend as it is a bit of a true life experience, I guess, and it's on the creepy side. But this was told to me firsthand by someone that experienced it. And just to sort of back up the legitimacy of this place, it was on an episode of the TV show Ghost Hunters before. And it's right in my backyard, pretty much. And it was called, at one time, it was called the Blakely Insane Asylum. And it's actually in a place called Scott Township, Pennsylvania. And the Ghost Hunters team was called there to film an episode because there were a lot of strange happenings in this building. And I've been by this building. I drive by it, like, pretty often, actually. And I've always thought it was, like, such a cool-looking building. I've always wanted to, like, go in there, like, look around or something. It's just one of those weird-looking buildings, like, something you would think of, like, I don't know, from, like, maybe from that game Silent Hill or something like that. It's just, looks like this really old, creepy building. And so I had no idea, you know, many years ago when I was younger, I had no idea the history of the place, but... I've come to know it over the years, and apparently way back in the day when the place was first built in the 1800s, it was a boarding house for a farm that was on the land, and all of the people that worked on the farm stayed in this building. They each had their own rooms and stuff. It was sort of a boarding house type of thing, and after the farm had closed down and, you know, everybody kind of left, the place was turned into an insane asylum. And it, I think, existed in that capacity for many decades, actually. I want to say somewhere like 50, 60 years or something like that. And, you know, a lot of bad things happened there and people passing away and tragically and things like that. But that place eventually closed down. And the facility that moved in after that was an animal testing facility, which is immediately creepy. So as you can see, this place has like a really like strange history about it. Like a couple of weird things have occupied this building. And, you know, Ghost Hunters did an episode there, like I mentioned. They found some really weird stuff. As it stands right now, there is a small, like, computer business that uses the first floor of this building as sort of their business. A lot of those employees have reported weird things happening to them and feeling like somebody's touching them or something like that. But the cool thing is
this by a little lake with a lot of geese on it?
No.
Okay.
Not really.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. I could take you up there one day if you want, but I guess on the Ghost Hunters episode, from what I saw of it, they're, you know, when they went down to the basement, all of like these weird cages are still down there from like the animal testing facility and stuff. Like for some reason, all that stuff was left there. It was never cleaned out and everything. But the story that I want to share is actually from my neighbor, heard it firsthand from him. He explained it to me because I ended up bringing up this place the one day, and he happen to cross paths with it because he works for a sanitation company, and you know the big kind of industrial dumpsters that they take to construction sites to get rid of materials and stuff like that. He delivers those dumpsters and picks them up. He drives the truck to pick them up and everything. So one of his orders came from this place, so he had to take a dumpster and drop it off here. I guess they were going to be cleaning some things out or disposing of something. And, you know, he drops the dumpster off there, and he has, you know, just like any type of delivery guy, he has some sort of slip that needs to be signed to verify that, you know, he did his job. So he goes in looking for somebody to sign the slip, and there's nobody around. You know, there's nobody at any sort of desk or anything. He's walking up and down the hallways. There's nobody there. He's like yelling for people. He's kind of calling out who he is. You know, I'm just a dumpster guy. I need somebody to sign the slip. Nobody's around. So he said he starts hearing these kind of like faint, like screams, like these really like weird, creepy sounds. And he's like, I didn't know what the hell it was, but he's like, I just wanted to get the hell out of there, get somebody to sign this and leave. So he's not finding anybody. He sees a set of steps, and he decides to go down into the lower level. And when he gets down there, these strange sounds are getting louder. And he said it was like the creepiest thing he's ever heard, like these weird like screams and bellows and stuff like that. Like, just really was not sure what it was at all. So he's still walking down the hallways yelling for somebody, like, I just need a signature, you know, I dropped this dumpster off, blah blah blah. And finally, this goes on for a long time, and finally, as he's walking down the hallway and the sounds are getting louder, some guy comes out of one of the rooms or one of the labs and sort of starts yelling at him. And he's like, hey, what are you doing down here? And he explains to him why he's there. And the guy's like, you need to get out of here right now. You're not allowed to be down here. And he's like, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, I need somebody to sign this. I just need to get out of here and get on with my route, you know? And so the guy's like, he's like, all right, that's fine. But he's like, you're not authorized to be down here. You know, you could get in a lot of trouble. You're not supposed to be down here. So they kind of like chased him back upstairs, and, you know, they gave him his signature, and he was able to get out of there. But he said it was really, really strange. Like, it was, you know, as if they were obviously hiding something. They didn't want him to see something, something that was not meant for his eyes, classified, whatever it was. And he said the guy was acting really, really strange. And plus that coupled with the fact that he was hearing all these weird sounds, he said, I didn't even want to ask any questions. I just wanted to get the hell out of there. And he's never been back, but
good luck sleeping tonight, everybody.
Right.
We find out where the Stranger Things actually took place, and apparently that's the culprit.
So yeah, one of the creepiest stories that we tell tonight happens to be, you know, very close to my house. So
there you go. Well, you know where not to go now. So
right.
Any more before we bring this episode to a close?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I know there's a ton out there, and then there's like different ones that aren't necessarily about scary things, or just general ones like the whole Pop Rocks and Soda type of thing and all that good stuff. So, but if you would like to share some of your favorite urban legends, you can do so by communicating with us. You can go to geekcastradio.com, comment on the episode post there. You can email us at feedback@geekcastradio or talkingincirclesatlive.com. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Talking in Circles, GCRN. You guys are also on Twitter. What are your Twitter names?
I am at HeroGageChuck.
I am at TheCrateForge.
And I am at TheRevolt. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed, but for now.
This has been Chuck.
This has been Gregor.
And this has been Dan, and we've been talking in creepy circles. Well, we'll see you next week.
I was going to see how long you would let me go for that.
I was like seeing how long, and then Chuck chimed in. I'm like, well, we got to... only getting worse.
we've been really bad at sound effects.
I thought you were going to go with skunk ape, but...
Yeah.